Teach Me to Code, episode 43. Hey everybody, and welcome back to the Teach Me to Code podcast. This is your host, Charles Maxwood, and this week we're going to be talking with Dave Hoover. He's a member of the Software Craftsmanship Movement, and I'll introduce him here in a minute. But before we get started, I want to remind you about our sponsors. There's New Relic. New Relic is one of the best application management tools out there. It identifies trouble spots by capturing response times, breaking down your requests, and telling you where slowdowns occur. And it also tracks errors and exceptions. It does all kinds of stuff. So go check them out at newrelic.com, or you can go to the website and click on the banner that's on the left. And that gives us a little credit and is a good way to support the show. There's also Chargeify, and Chargeify is a tool that allows you to manage your charges and subscriptions through an easy-to-use API. So if you're making changes in your application, then you need Chargeify. So give them a try. Go to Chargeify.com and sign up. Also, I am, if you didn't know, a freelance developer. I develop applications in Ruby on Rails. And so if you have a web application that you need built or something else that involves Ruby, go ahead and give me a call. My phone number is 801-367-6164. I'm also available for training, coaching, code reviews. So if you're looking for somebody to just help you learn how to code better, you know, I'm available for that as well. If you want to leave feedback for the show, you can do so by calling 801-753-8279. That's also a good way to ask a question that I might answer on the show. So if you have a question about coding practices, agile practices, building a team, you know, anything like that, you know, give me a call at that number. Again, 801-753-8279. Or you can email me, chuck@teachmetocode.com. Or finally, you can find me on Twitter at CMaxW, that's CMAXW, and I'll do what I can to answer your questions on the show here. Now, that's about all the announcements I have, so I'm going to go ahead and turn the interview over, or I'm going to switch the interview on. I'll just pick things up on the other end. But, you know, I really appreciate you listening, and I hope you enjoy the show as much as I did. Thanks. Hey everybody, this is Charles Maxwood with the Teach Me to Code podcast, and our guest this week is Dave Hoover from Optiva. His official title, it looks like, is Chief Craftsman over at Optiva. He does Ruby, Rails, Agile. He's a prominent member of the Software Craftsmanship Movement out in Chicago, and he is the author of Apprenticeship Patterns, Guidance for the Aspiring Software Craftsman, which hopefully is all of us. So, welcome to the show, Dave.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Now, I am a little curious. We've talked to Corey Haynes and Micah Martin about software craftsmanship. I'm a little curious as to what your take is on software craftsmanship. What does it mean to you in general?
I think what it means to me kind of got started with reading Pete McBreen's book about 8 years ago, I think it was. His book titled Software Craftsmanship. And it was kind of a process of elimination for me, almost like, well, the concept of scientist doesn't fit for me. The concept of an engineer doesn't really fit for me, at least my understanding of it at the time and maybe even now. But the concept of a craftsman fits for me. So it's always been a bit more about like me and just what and how and finding a useful approach to my career and to my work and the craftsmanship philosophy fit really well for me. I was a self-taught programmer. I came out of a background in psychology, and so I didn't really have feel like I could call myself a computer scientist or even a software engineer, especially 2 years into being into my professional career. But I did feel like I could say, well, I'm an apprentice, right? I want to be a software craftsman and I can say that I'm an apprentice right now. This being back in like 2002, 2003, when I was first exposed to these ideas. So, and just growing out of that, I've just kind of stuck with that mentality in terms of, you know, around 2005, 2006, I felt like I was a journeyman. I felt like I'd kind of transitioned out of apprentice level stuff and was feeling confident about taking on my own projects and mentoring other people. And that kind of signaled to me the transition to a journeyman stage, which I still feel like I'm in right now.
Do you know anyone who you consider kind of the master craftsman level?
I think the person that I would say that is the person that I have a really strong sense that he's a master craftsman is a guy named Fred George. There's a lot of other great, super experienced developers, people like Uncle Bob. Corey Haynes is another, although I think he and I are kind of both, he's further along the journey than I am, but I think he would consider himself a journeyman still. But I don't know. In terms of somebody, I bring up Fred George. He's not very well known. He's spoken at Software Craftsmanship North America. He's spoken at a few conferences, but generally he keeps a low profile. But he is somebody who's got, you know, 30 plus years of experience, and he's still like on teams, you know, like building software. I met him at ThoughtWorks when I was there back in 2004. So he's done some consulting, but the last few years he's been, he's been on a single project for a single company, but just building, you know, really innovative stuff and working at multiple levels of the organization like you'd imagine a master craftsman should be able to do in terms of interacting all the way up to the CEO level and all the way down to the apprentice level. He's kind of the kind of person that I'm one of the people I look up to in terms of like what I'd like to be, where I'd like to be when I'm in my, I'm not exactly sure how old he is, but like say in my 50s.
Oh, nice. Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. And, you know, I'm going to have to pull some links on him and see what I can find out. But, you know, it's always interesting to me to hear, you know, who people are looking to as kind of the masters and the inspiration. And I think that there's a lot of value in finding these kinds of people and taking the inspiration and even reaching out to them and seeing if there's a way that we can, you know, improve our own craft, you know, by kind of touching base with them and going, you know, here's where I'm at, or, you know, here's something that I've done, you know, what recommendations do you have for me, you know, and, you know, either by reading what he's written or listening to talks that he's given or actually, you know, reaching out personally, whatever that is, you know, there are all these people out there that we have the opportunity to connect with and, you know, really become better craftsmen.
Right.
You know, really become better at what we do.
Indeed. Yeah, and that was something that resonated with me when I first came across these ideas. And that is being exposed to the people at that level. It all happened at once for me. I kind of wandered into extreme programming around 2002. I wandered into like a pattern language community at the same time. And so I was suddenly went from being considering myself a Perl programmer. So I was, which has a lot of great people in that community, but it was, a single community. But going from that to being exposed to multiple other communities with people like Ward Cunningham and like, you know, leading the charge and Kent Beck and Martin Fowler and Uncle Bob and being exposed to people of that caliber fit into the software craftsmanship approach because it explicitly values people who are, you know, leading charge. And the value of like looking at what they're doing and figuring out how to become somebody at that level. And also valuing people that are actively developing and not just becoming talking heads and, you know, pundits.
Right.
Yeah,
that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, I think we all have, you know, a little bit of Uncle Bob or, you know, Kent Beck or whoever in us. You know, we just have to figure out how to get there. You know, And, you know, you kind of wrote the book on apprenticeship and, you know, and learning. You know, I'm also in the middle of another book about learning. It's called Refactor Your Wetware by Andy Hunt. And he talks about He talks about the process of becoming an expert, which to me kind of, you know, speaks of the same, you know, kind of journey that you go through to become a master. I think the two terms are synonymous. They don't mean exactly the same thing, but, you know, I think the ideas behind them, a lot of them are the same. So how do you apprentice yourself to somebody, or how do you find these masters and then, you know, start down that road of becoming Uncle Bob of the future or whatever?
Yeah. Well, I would say just to pick on one thing you just said, and that is, or pick up one thing you just said, which is expert versus like master. I actually did write an article about 5 years or so about the difference between like what I'd consider an expert in something and a master at something, or at least a master craftsman versus like an expert programmer. Uh-huh. And that is that, like, and it might be, this is just me like riffing off those two concepts, and it might be, I don't know. I wrote it up in an article, and it may or may not make sense at this point, but I believe that an expert, or somebody who puts a lot of value on being an expert, is somebody who's interested in like becoming better at something they're already good at, or wants to build up expertise in a single problem. And I think that's, or a single solution maybe. And I think that's an important skill. Like, hey, I'm so deeply interested in like databases, data storage, that I'm going to just basically become an expert at that, right? And I'm going to be kind of single focused. That's different to me than someone who wants to be a master craftsman, who is somebody who might gain expertise at a lot of different things over the decades, but they're going to end up being fairly general. Uh-huh. In there. I mean, they might become, like, over the course of their career, they might become a world renowned, I don't know, object oriented programmer or functional programmer, but they're not restricting their learning to that. I would say that a master craftsman is somebody who may be working every day with people who are better at any one thing than they are, but they are good at many things and can kind of weave together a lot of different expertise in order to accomplish a goal. And one of those things that they're going to need to get good at is understanding people and organizing teams, in my opinion. Your question was about apprenticeship and how to go about like starting that journey, right? Uh-huh. Like how do you go how do you go make yourself the next Uncle Bob? First of all, like, you're not going to be Uncle Bob,
right?
Because like one of the, when you look at these like luminary type people, they always have like a really interesting mixture of talents, right? Like Uncle Bob is, regardless of what industry you're in, like, he's one of the better public speakers you're ever going to listen to. Like, I believe he's got a background in preaching, literally, when he was at a young age. So he's got this like ability to like really just light up a crowd.
Right.
So you want to, you know, look to what people like him are doing, and definitely listen to some, like, a lot of the advice that he gives, and let somebody like that inspire you. But you got to like know your strengths, right?
Right.
I would say that, like, for me, like, I didn't, when I discovered that I was apprenticed, that was like step zero, right? Like, understanding where you're at. Like, prior to reading that book, I really didn't feel like I had a place to kind of hang my hat. I didn't understand where I was. I just thought I was a really good Perl programmer.
Mm-hmm.
And so just number one, like, and it's, I write about it in the book, is having an accurate self-assessment, like understanding where you're at. Number two, like, is realizing there are a growing number of apprenticeship programs out there. Not everybody can take advantage of those because they require a lot of your time. They require a lot of focus. They don't pay you very much money at the beginning. So there's a certain amount of sacrifice there. There was barely any apprenticeship programs back in 2002. And so you have to kind of construct your own apprenticeship, right? You have to go out and find mentors and get them where you can. You got to go find books that fill in the gaps. So books are what were really huge for me being a self-taught programmer. I had to go kind of construct my own reading list. And that was a really important exercise for me in terms of just filling in some missing theoretical knowledge that I'm still catching up on. And just using the web, like using online communities to help fill that reading list with the right books, was a really important exercise. And just dedicating time every day to reading. I was, you know, fortunately, we have good public transportation here in Chicago, and I live about 40 minutes away by train from the city, and so I had this time every day that I could just sit there and read.
Right.
On the other side, like from a personal, like face-to-face mentoring situation, like the way I found that for myself was doing kind of the scary, risky thing and approaching one of the leaders of like one of the local user groups I attended and asking like explicitly, can I be your apprentice? And that was scary and I felt stupid. But I knew that like if I wanted to get where I wanted to go, I needed to take risks like that. And I never worked with the guy full time. I never even paired with the guy, but he agreed to have breakfast with me twice a month. And his name is Wyatt Sutherland. He's a really amazing person. He's actually a very like accomplished musician, a cello player, a cellist, I guess I should say. And so I respected him at multiple levels, but the fact that he was also a very effective, agile consultant and developer. And this is back in like 2002, 2003 again. And just the fact that he took that time twice a month, like out of his busy schedule, he had four kids, he was traveling all the time, he had concerts, he's a really busy guy, but he took that time to spend with me and like coached me through how to like pitch, you know, an extreme programming pilot project at my current employer. That gave me so much confidence to kind of run with these presentations that I was scared to give. Uh-huh. Right, I don't really enjoy public speaking a whole lot, and especially back then it was totally nerve-wracking. But sitting down with this guy Wyatt like gave me a pretty big boost of confidence that like, well, if he believes that I could do this, you know, maybe I can pull this off. And it really propelled me quite a bit. And then the next thing I did was, a year or so later, the pilot project did, mixed results, a certain amount of success. I certainly got a lot of good experience out of it. But I recognized that like, I was too senior, right? And a lot of people that have a certain amount of talent and a certain amount of passion will find in certain situations that they rise to the top too quickly and then they run out of mentors. Not that you can't learn from the people around you, but a lot of times in certain IT and development organizations, you're just surrounded by people that generally don't care.
Right.
Which is sad and it's just demoralizing. And so you got to go put yourself in a situation to be the worst. Right. And so that was something that I didn't really conceptualize it at the time. I just realized I needed to work with better people. If I want to be a great developer, I need to work with great developers. And I felt like I wasn't surrounded by enough great developers or any great developers. And so that's when I tried to get in the door at a couple different places like Object Mentor and ThoughtWorks, and ended up at ThoughtWorks and very quickly found myself to be the worst guy in the team situation, which is exactly what I needed. Because I was kind of, after a couple years at my previous company, I was a senior application developer, which I recognized after a little while as being, that was kind of silly, that title for somebody with, no education in this, two or three years of experience, just had a knack for it and a certain amount of passion. It was just silly. I had the amazing luck to find myself, on a team with guys like Obi Fernandez, Aslak Kellisoy, and Dave Estelles, and I'm just trying to soak it all in as fast as I can, keep up with these guys, or catch up to these guys, or just learn a little bit of what they have to teach. And that was a really amazing experience for me in 2004. That still sticks with me.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
And it's interesting too that, you know, you're talking about, even at ThoughtWorks, you know, you were working with people that I think a lot of folks in the Ruby community, for example, I mean, they really take them as examples of, you know, the top level high performer kind of people. I mean, Obi Fernandez, he went out and he wrote the Rails 3 way the Rails way and now the Rails 3 way, which is kind of funny.
Yeah,
title, but anyway, we'll keep the clean rating and just let people think that on their own.
There you go.
But you know, he's out there and he's built this company where, you know, he's kind of got a reputation now for, you know, hiring the best and, you know, and building, you know, applications in the best possible way and things like that. And Aslak went out and built Qcumber, which is a testing framework that works in tandem with, you know, some of the other testing frameworks that we have in Ruby. And, you know, so, yeah, I mean, it's interesting that, you know, you just worked your way into positions where, you know, you could work with these guys that, you know, are kind of considered, you know, part of the top echelon, I guess, of developers.
I would say so. I mean, I was pretty, not everybody, I mean, that was luck. I mean, I didn't get into ThoughtWorks by luck, but but getting on a project with those three guys was certainly lucky, and I've just tried to make the most of it.
Yeah. So what recommendations do you have, say, for people that aren't in a position to go work for a ThoughtWorks or, you know, go and work with some of these experts? You know, I know that there are usually experts locally, but let's say that that's not even the case. Then what do you do?
The best advice I can give is join your local community. And if you don't have much of a local community, try to start it. And recognize that it might, like, so, I mean, there's a lot of people around the Chicago area that are very spread out, right? Chicago is a huge area, and there's a major sprawl, which can be frustrating. If you want to be part of, like, the Chicago user group community, people will tend to, like, try to start user groups out further out in the suburbs, which can be met with mixed results. But just putting that effort in to try to start something. There's a guy named Mike Hall who works with us, who's started like the McHenry County Software Craftsmanship Group, which he's kind of morphed from a couple different previous titles. But and that group's never going to have like a ton of people in it, but he's going to connect with other people that are going to kind of keep his enthusiasm up. One of the other patterns from our book is nurture your passion. And if you find yourself in a situation where you might get to the end of the day, you might be more discouraged than you were at the beginning of the day. You got to do what you can to like nurture that passion that you have to be a great developer and to just enjoy development. Cause that passion is what's going to get you through. And so if you're not getting kind of re-energized during the daylight hours, you got to go out and figure out how to get that after hours.
Right.
So one of the best ways is through user groups. In my experience. Because that's going to connect you with people that inevitably have different, you know, more experience than you, different experiences with you, a different network that you can get connected into. And you're obviously just going to learn a lot there. But I also say, I mean, depending on your situation, there are more apprenticeship programs now than there were even 2 years ago that are totally willing to take people from wherever in the country and get them started. So 3 years ago, I think, as far as I know, the only two very active apprenticeship programs in the United States, at least, were at Optiva, my company, and Eighth Light, another local company.
Mm-hmm.
Now we've got, it's people have really started seeing the benefits. I mean, companies like Optiva and Eighth Light are kind of peer companies, are seeing the benefits of this approach, right? That it really pays for itself. It's not a good business decision to have an apprenticeship program if you do it right. So now you can go, you know, someone has started an apprenticeship at HashRocket. somebody has started an apprenticeship at Relevance, or they're starting a program. You know, they're going to be starting an apprenticeship program at Lean Dog in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. They're starting, you know, starting an apprenticeship in Columbus at Edge Case.
Yep.
So, and that's great for those local guys. But I mean, I know all those companies would be willing to relocate people if they're the right people, because especially for companies in smaller cities, that's how you grow local talent. You take them from someplace else and you grow them up.
Right.
And so finding companies, or even if you're a motivated, enthusiastic apprentice level person, go and pitch an apprenticeship program at somebody who doesn't even have one yet, but you see that you've got people there that you want to work with. Just go tell them that you want to be their apprentice and see what happens.
That's an interesting thought. I was talking to Joe O'Brien from Edgecase over at the Ruby Web Conference that was this August, and you know, he was talking about it, and he was really excited about it. And you know, I've also talked to Micah Martin, and you know, hopefully that interview will show up on the Ruby on Rails podcast pretty soon here. But you know, both of them, you know, they talked about it, and it seems like the companies get as much out of it as the people that they're apprenticing, even if they don't actually bring them on as their own talent in their own company.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, Micah and I crossed paths for years, and our companies are pretty close. And we've actually like copied ideas from their apprenticeship program into ours as we've kind of evolved them over the years. And we've certainly seen that, it pays for itself in a sense. So even though we take a risk to a certain extent on these people, but they're also taking a risk on us in terms of like, I guarantee they could go make more money over the 6 months of their apprenticeship somewhere else. And they're working really hard, you know, for that time. They're sacrificing some money, and they're giving us a lot of their time. But for all the ones that have been successful, you know, it's paid off big time. They've got great opportunities now. That's doing some really interesting work.
Mm-hmm. Now, how would you go about kind of trying to sell this to a local company? You know, let's say that I found a company here that I was like, man, I really want to work with this guy and this guy, and you know, that, you know, maybe I can talk them into it. What are the best things to kind of say or share to get them interested in doing something like that?
Oh man, that's a good question. Let me think for a sec. it all depends on what you're willing to give up, right? Mm-hmm. What your financial situation is.
Right.
Like when I started programming, I already was married with kids. I started when I was 26, so I wasn't in a great. I couldn't have come and been in a apprentice at a place like Optiva or Eighth Flight, because I couldn't have taken a step back financially like that. So it all depends on what the person's situation is. But I mean, if you're completely open to sacrificing almost everything and have some way of like living with your parents or whatever, like, you know. You can certainly point at examples where people have gone and like just said, "Hey, let me just shadow you for 2 weeks."
Uh-huh.
You know, put milestones in place in terms of like, well, here, you don't even pay me, right? Let me just shadow you for 2 weeks. If in 2 weeks you feel like I'm contributing, then pay me X, right? And in 2 months, if you think I'm contributing, you know, a certain amount more, pay me Y. Right, and just come into it like that. Of course, that's probably not going to work at a large organization, but if there's small shops that are local, then it's certainly possible. They're, especially if they're open to like a pair programming sort of situation.
Uh-huh.
If they're not into pair programming, this is going to be difficult because they're just going to see you as, you know, somebody they're going to have to babysit. But if you can pair with them and they're open to just having somebody, if their physical workspace is conducive to pairing, then it could be an easy way in. And then you can also, I mean, at least if you were to pitch this idea kind of out of the blue to someplace, you can point to, there's plenty of examples nowadays of people doing this successfully.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas 8 years ago, you know, it would just sound kind of like a crazy idea, and you could point to maybe one or two places, but mainly it's kind of easy to dismiss. Nowadays, you point to 6-7 different companies that all have very respected people, you know, leading them, and it's hard to deny the fact that people are thinking this is a good idea. You point to somebody like Corey Haynes, who basically did go out and just pair program with people for free and see what that's done for him as a developer and the benefits that everybody got out of his journeys. You know, it's hard to argue against, in my opinion. It's only limited by people's imagination in terms of the people that would be considering doing an apprenticeship program or just taking on an apprentice and seeing what happens. That's kind of the message I'm going to be talking about over the next 6 months. I was just in Sweden last week, trying to encourage people to get in, to be more, you know, friendly to newbies, or start mentoring newbies, or even consider starting apprenticeship programs at their companies. I'm going to be taking a tour similar to Corey in January and February, kind of from Chicago through Ohio and down to Virginia and North Carolina, and talking in a few places about that. Trying to work from the other side, right? Talk to people that are kind of in the positions of a certain amount of power that could actually take steps towards, formalizing apprenticeship at their workplaces.
I think that would be really interesting, you know, and I really wish that there were more opportunities like this, you know, kind of out here in the West, you know?
Yeah, that would, I mean, it's funny, being a Midwestern person, and for some reason my network goes east of me.
Yeah.
And it's partially because of Corey, right?
Uh-huh.
He made a lot of connections for a lot of different companies and people, and they all tend to be Chicago and east, including to London and in Sweden. There's a couple of companies that we've all kind of connected now around these software craftsmanship ideals.
Uh-huh.
And there is like a need to go west. Because I know there's people west of Chicago, there's a jillion people over there, and I know there's plenty of companies that are into this sort of, they would be very open to these ideas. So I think there's an opportunity there.
Yeah, I think so too, and I think really it just, you know, it just needs somebody to go out and kind of make it happen, you know, and I'm not saying that that's me, because I just don't know. I mean, there are a lot of other factors that go into it, but you know, it would be really nice if somebody did it.
Absolutely. And I hope somebody listening will do that.
Yeah. So on to another topic. I'm a little curious. You said that you had another book that you kind of got, I guess you've been thinking about for a while.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. It's in some ways to me feels like a natural next, or a sequel, I guess, or companion book to Apprenticeship Patterns. And it's really just kind of come out of talking about apprenticeship and the uptick of companies that are starting apprenticeship programs. And we tend to be, even a lot of these companies, in some ways people might consider us competitors, we generally don't behave that way. We're all pretty collaborative. And so we all reach out to each other, and like Optiva and 8th Light, we're kind of the first companies that started this sort of collaborative, relationship, even though we're competitors, even in the same city. And that was definitely facilitated by Corey. But we shared ideas about our apprenticeship programs, and they've taken a couple ideas from us. We've taken a few ideas from them. And so as more companies are willing to give this a try, I'm starting to get questions from, you know, some people at HashRocket, or some people at Relevance, or some people at EdgeCase, and it makes me realize there's just a need for sharing the things that we've learned across all of these companies, and especially if we're serious about wanting this to get out into the wider community and into the industry. And I am serious about that, because I feel, I don't know, I remember vividly, because I was kind of a later age when I felt this way, but I remember being a newbie and feeling all this excitement and potential in me, and yet just being frustrated that there I couldn't find, that I didn't have a lot of options.
Uh-huh.
And I just really want, you know, 3, 5, 6, 10 years from now for there just to be an order of magnitude.
Oh, sorry about that. Hang on.
It's okay. Nice. I want there to be an order of magnitude more options for people, you know?
Uh-huh.
So the book is about apprenticeship programs. I mean, right now, like, my working title in my head is apprenticeship programs. And it just, it helps me to have like a title and a subtitle. It just kind of helps me to motivate me to start blogging about this more and messing with ideas. So I even have a subtitle, which for me is clever. It's developing software. Let's see. Developing software developers while developing software.
Uh-huh.
Because that's kind of been my, to a certain extent, my self-proclaimed job description for the last 5 years. So I want to figure out, I don't know if there's a big enough audience to actually have a real book for this, and maybe there is. I'll probably have to figure out a way of generating that audience through getting these ideas out there. But maybe it's a white paper, maybe it's just a series of blog posts. I don't know, maybe it's self-published. But yeah, I want to write a book about, all right, well, okay, we believe that apprenticeship is a good idea. Now what? That's the kind of questions I keep getting. And all I can do right now is just kind of talk about my experiences at Optiva and what I know of experiences elsewhere. But I'd like to spend the next few years, you know, pulling ideas from other places, and kind of like what we did with the apprenticeship programs, which was just, okay, well, these were good experiences for me as a newbie and getting from point A to point B. And what I did was, after I kind of started with a little framework for how it worked for me, I went out and tested that against other people's experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd want to maybe follow that same route with apprenticeship programs, which is, okay, well, this is how we kind of evolved our apprenticeship program from point A to point B at Optiva. Well, let's go test that against the way that 8 Flights evolved theirs and how, you know, HashRocket's evolving theirs and yada, 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 yada. And over the next few years, kind of come out on the other end with something that people will make it easier for other people to start down that road.
Right. Now, I'm also a little curious, you know, how do you qualify a mentor or an apprentice program, you know, to know if it's something that's going to work for you or not?
Oh, man, that's a good, I thought you were going to ask, how do you qualify an apprentice? which we have a lot more experience in than this question. How would I recommend a potential apprentice evaluate an apprenticeship program?
Right.
The only way I know of doing that is looking at what these people are doing.
Uh-huh.
You know, and the easiest way, the most anonymous way of doing that, of course, is starting to follow the people that are various people at the company, right? Whether that's, you know, follow the company from, you know, follow the CEO, follow, you know, one of their senior developers or two, follow their apprentices, right? Mm-hmm. The people that are currently apprenticing there. And that's where we actually see a lot of apprentices finding their way to us, is by following other apprentices. Because that's, I mean, of course, the CEO has a conflict of interest, or I have a conflict of interest as a principal of Optiva. I'm going to be like, yeah, of course, apprenticeships always work out and they're always awesome and everyone has a great experience.
Right.
And a smart young person or a smart newbie, it's going to be like, well, I want to hear from the actual apprentice.
Right.
And so that's what we've seen. People are smart enough to know that. One of the reasons why having our apprentices spend time on Twitter and on their blog is to expose what they're doing, so that encouraging other people to give it a shot.
Right.
We've had people go and join 8 Flight because they've been following Optiva apprentices and vice. We've had people come to Optiva. Our next apprentice, John Holman, who's starting next month, you know, found out about apprenticeship through 8 Flight and then found his way to Optiva from there. So that's the easiest way, I would say, is just, you know, through online interactions.
Right.
But again, if you can put yourself in a situation where you can take the time to go and visit places, that's the other way. I mean, and John, the guy that's starting with us next month, he did do that. He this has been like a year-long process for him, I think, in terms of he's come and visited Chicago a few times. He lives in Minnesota right now. And taking the time to meet the people face-to-face. It's you know, you're going to have, this is your career, and this is a big chunk of your life. Mm-hmm. And you got to take it seriously enough to let go and reach out to people and take risks, meet people, even if you're intimidated, like, you know, get out there and shake hands with them and see what they're about. Ask if you can just visit. A lot of these companies, and more people are just open to having people visit and right. just spend a day observing. That's just a theme that's just growing. Because that ultimately, that's the best way for both sides to kind of evaluate each other.
Right.
Is watching them do their thing, mm-hmm. as opposed to just being able to talk a good game.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. And you know, you made some good points. You know, you follow the people that are involved. You know, both the apprentices and the, you know, kind of the mentors or the employees of the company. And you know, yeah, just get involved and see what's going on. I do have one other question, and that is, you know, maybe there's somebody like me, for example, where, you know, most of these programs are out in the Midwest, and there's just no way I'm going to move to the Midwest.
Yeah. Why would you give up those mountains?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm happy here. I love it here. Yeah. My family's here. My wife's family's here. I mean, I mentioned moving anywhere, and my wife, you know, just tears up, and, you know, that's pretty much it. You know, it's over. You can't fight that. So
that's why I'm here.
Yeah. So, you know, are there other opportunities for people? You know, I mean, can they reach out to, you know, folks like the people that you employ and not necessarily, you know, have the opportunity to pair program, but, you know, maybe say, hey, you know, do you have a project that you think would be good for me to work on to build my skills? Or, you know, I've done this and this and this, and what do you think is the next logical step? I mean, you know, do you do that kind of mentoring as well, or are there people out there that do?
Trying to think. I mean, well, I've definitely gotten emails from people in the past about, you know, just looking for advice. Like they're in that situation where I just recently got an email from somebody who was in the situation you're kind of talking about. Like, well, I'm going to be where I'm at. And I'm not looking to move to Chicago, but can you give me some advice about what I should do? I don't know if that's just kind of advice giving from my point of view, like as opposed to mentoring. But something I learned early on, like even before I was a programmer, it was when I was in graduate school. I'd get to the end of the book, and an author would put their email address at the end, you know, like in some, you know, afterword or whatever. And I always, like, I was just eager to learn more, and so I emailed the author, and I was always just amazed at how approachable they were. And so, and I've kept doing that over the years. Like, I'd finish, you know, reaching out to people that I would, when I was younger, I would think, you know, they would never take the time of day to talk to me. Uh-huh. So I guess what I'm saying is, like, don't be afraid to reach out and ask questions, because...
Right.
You know, email Corey Haynes, email Obi, email me, you know, like, we're happy to like dispense advice, of course, but, you know, for people that are actually looking for mentoring, I don't know of any like remote mentoring going on right now, that I might be forgetting about it. None comes to mind right off the bat. I think the best thing to do for people that might be like in the West right now is, you know, from both directions, start proposing apprenticeship.
Uh-huh.
From the apprentice proposing to, you know, companies or specific people and specific potential mentors proposing it to their companies. Like I said, there's a kind of a hole there, as far at least, or maybe it's just a hole in my understanding of what's going on, you know, in Seattle and San Francisco and the Denver, you know, and Utah area.
Uh-huh.
So I don't have a great answer to that other than just nudging people towards each other.
Yep. Okay. Well, I appreciate it, and I appreciate the advice. You know, I think there's a lot here for, you know, the audience to take in, but I think it's really important, you know, the idea that you had of, you know, building software developers by, you know, while building software. I honestly think that's the best way to learn, you know,
right.
And I think there's a lot of value in finding ways to, you know, to basically learn that way. My first development job, I came out of QA, and I'd been in QA for 6 months. And before that, I was in technical support and IT. And, you know, I hadn't really done a whole lot of programming, you know, even professional programming, anything. And, you know, I got picked up by this consulting company, and they basically, you know, joined me at the hip with this guy that had been programming for like 10 years.
That's awesome.
And he was, he'd been a .NET developer for like 7 or 8 years, and then he switched to Ruby on Rails, and he'd been doing that for a year or so. And I'll tell you, you know, that honestly was the best, you know, the best learning experience that I had was day in and day out, just, you know, working with them. And we weren't pair programming, but, you know, I mean, literally every day it was like, okay, try this, okay, do this, you know. And he wasn't deliberately trying to mentor me in any way, but but the nature of the project was, okay, now we've got to do this. And I'm looking at him like, I have no idea, you know, how to do this. And
right.
And, you know, and that's what I was getting. And it sounds like, you know, some of your experience was that way as well. And honestly, you know, that is literally the best experience I've had. And, you know, I've kind of been looking for that ever since in the other companies that I've worked for. And, you know, unfortunately, in some of the companies I worked for, you know, I wound up being the more senior guy rather than the junior guy. And, you know, it's really not as fun.
Yeah, especially at certain, I mean, especially when it's premature.
Yeah.
You know, when you're in a senior role, but you're not really senior yet, you know, in terms of like where you want to be, like relative to where you want to end up.
Yeah.
I will say like one technique that it worked out really well for me. It sounded fairly similar in terms of being joined at the hip to somebody who was more senior for a while. Just a couple of years into programming, we hit a problem that we needed help with, and I, you know, like my company was like saying, "Hey, if you could just handle this, that'd be great." It was written by a consultant. This software. If you could just get up to speed on the software, you know, that would solve a lot of problems for us. And I wasn't afraid to say after a little while, like, you know what, I'm not getting up to speed. I can't. Like, this is stuff is over my head.
Uh-huh.
So can we please get that consultant to come back in? And then I got to get joined to the hip with this senior Perl developer. And I learned so much pairing with him, watching him, sitting next, like maybe not even pairing, but like sitting close to him and having him nearby for questions.
Uh-huh.
That was a great, like that one, that was a situation where I just kind of opportunistically got to call somebody in who's not an explicit mentor, but just a knowledgeable developer and have him come in from the outside. And that would be a great way of you know, getting some like short-term mentoring. If you could find somebody who could solve a concrete problem for you, for your company, and you could, you know, learn from.
Yep.
That would be great for somebody who's in an existing company who just wants a little injection of awesomeness.
Yep. That makes a lot of sense too. And you know, I mean, I have a friend that's trying to transition into programming right now. He's kind of a marketing expert for a technology company out here. And, you know, and so I've been trying to help him out. And one of our mutual friends actually, you know, he basically said, you know, you guys should work together on a project, because he didn't have time to work with him. And I really haven't either. But, you know, it was kind of that same idea where it was like, you should work on a project together. And then, you know, you can look at his code and tell him what he, you know, what he can work on and what he can, you know, where he can improve. And, you know, at the same time, you know, in the end, you both have something to show for your effort. And, you know, I thought that was also a really good idea.
Cool.
All right. Well, I think we're just about out of time. I really do appreciate you coming onto the show. And again, you know, I think there are some real gems in here as far as, you know, what people can do to go out and find people to help them, you know, get better. And, you know, I think, you know, you've touched on a lot of things that, you know, not just in apprenticeship, but just in how we can pick up some of these things and learn them.
Cool. So, yeah, it's good talking to you.
Yeah. So how do people find you? What's the best way to get a hold of you or to, you know, see what you're blogging about or thinking about?
Yeah. So my homepage is redsquirrel.com/Dave. I'm on Twitter. I'm Red Squirrel. And yeah, that's probably the two easiest ways. Or just Google my name, Dave Hoover.
Okay.
And try to ignore all the Google images that it brings up. There's a comic book artist by named Dave Hoover who's a little bit. He's not at the top of the Dave Hoover Google search, but he's drawn some interesting images. I'll just put it that way.
Okay. All right. Sounds good.
All right.
All right.
Well, thanks a lot.
Yeah. No problem. All right. We're back. I want to thank Dave again for coming on to the show. And I just want to remind you to leave feedback for the show. You can do so by going to twitter.com/cmaxw and send me a tweet. You can also call in at 801-753-8279. And finally, you can email me, Chuck, at teachmetocode.com. Thanks.